From One World Trade Center, where we can't figure out a 401k, but we can fill out a fantasy lineup. Welcome to the Golf Digest Fantasy Podcast.
Welcome back to the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix Podcast. I'm Alex Myers. I'm once again joined by Joel Beal, who is now back in studio today after an eventful week at Oakmont. And the PGA Tour continues this week with the Quicken Loans National, which is at Congressional Country Club. Not exactly an easy course for these guys after U.S. Open, another course that has hosted a bunch of U.S. Opens. So, but first, let's talk a little about the what happened last week, Joel. What do you make of all of it?
Oh, there was a ruling. I don't know if you saw that or not. It was the craziest thing. On the grounds, I'm guessing people were just getting the updates through their phone or even just word of mouth to the galleries, but there was a lack of excitement among the fans because I think they were just, what's going on? They were trying to figure out, and because so many people were looking at their phones trying to, you know, ascertain what was going to happen to Johnson, they were missing golf right in front of them. And I talked a little bit of this with Ryan Harrington and Jeff Shackelford on Sunday night. There really is there were a lack of scoreboards across Oakmont. Hmm. So, which, again, you would see maybe two or three names, but because of this Johnson thing, you had no idea what would happen if he did get docked the penalty stroke. So I had an earpiece in most of the day. It wasn't the broadcast, so it was a special radio. So as a viewer watching home, how did you see it play out? Was it really as confusing as it was on the grounds? So as someone watching on TV, what did you take away from it?
It was madness. I mean, I had a sense of outrage almost. I mean, and I was actually glad that the announcers seemed to feel the same way. I mean, you know, they weren't yelling and shouting, but Paul Azinger and Brad Facts and even Joe Buck all kept harping on the fact that this was a very unusual situation and that it seemed a bit unfair to everyone involved. And frankly, to the fans watching at home. So you're kind of watching and you're not exactly knowing what's going to happen. And it was a total mess. I will say this, though. They kept going back to it, which I think they needed to do to just keep reminding everybody. But it was almost to the point where, you know, it was enough. But if you were tuning in at any point, you kind of needed to be appraised of the situation. And again, it's just unfortunate because that's what everybody talked about almost the whole afternoon. And that's even what most people were talking about yesterday. On Monday, sorry, and even on Tuesday, when we should be talking about the brilliance of Dustin Johnson, especially under those conditions.
2 days removed, looking back, that's the thing that actually shocks me the most. You mentioned this confusion. In the media center, I mean, you've been on this job longer than I have. It takes a lot to get writers riled up. They're mostly even keel for the most part. People were generally angry at the USGA. There was yelling in the media center. I felt bad. A few officials actually came through, just questioned and almost heckled. Mm-hmm. On the course, I had the inside the ropes pass. So as I was going up, people were almost looking at me as official, which actually felt awesome for once. But actually, early in the week, someone asked if I was a player. The one day I wore pants.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's
the key, by the way. You pants. Wear pants, yep. You look like a pro.
That's where it's at.
Yep, definitely.
Of course, they would have quickly realized with the Nike shoes, Under Armour shirt, and Adidas hat.
Mismatch.
That was,
yeah.
But
you got to pick a sponsor, Joel.
Right?
That's the problem.
You know,
you're a free agent right now.
Exactly. what the hell are we talking about? So people were like literally grabbing me. Are they really going to do this? Are they going to penalize Johnson? Mm-hmm. It sounds like it. They were dropping like F-bombs. They were that upset.
Yeah.
Which, in a weird way, I think is almost good. There's that... You know, it's in golf, you kind of just cheer for everybody.
Right.
During the, you know, Ryder and President's Cup, you'll see a little bit of animosity, but it was a first time that I felt like there was a palpable hatred in a golf gallery. It was just very bizarre.
Yeah.
I can't really remember anything like it.
Yeah. On the bright side for Dustin Johnson is that it helped his popularity even more. I mean, the crowd, like you said, the crowd was rallying behind him. They wanted him to win anyway after everything that's happened, especially at Chambers Bay last year. But man, the DJ chants, at least it sounded like that everybody was rooting for him by the end. And I was amazed, or was wondering if the fans there knew what was going on, because I was saying, unless they happened to have the radio earpiece or something, that they wouldn't even know what was going on. So I was wondering about that, but that's interesting to hear that they did know and that they were upset. And I just loved how you mentioned a lot of veteran golf writers getting upset about this. the DJ's fellow players, and we're talking about superstar players, Rory and Jordan and Tiger, coming out to his defense. You know, these are guys are going to have to play in the U.S. Open again and face these USGA officials, and they're calling it a farce and a joke. And it just amazes me that almost everybody thinks that this shouldn't have been a penalty or it was handled wrong, except for the USGA.
One of the good things that I did take away from the experience was, I just mentioned earlier, the crowd was very tempered throughout because, again, they were checking their cell phones. They were very confused what they were watching. When Johnson did come through, man, it was amazing. The crowd support, everyone, let's go, DJ, come on, you got this. And let's be honest, Johnson's not a very emotional guy for the most part, but he did seem those last three holes. The strut was going a little bit. Yeah. He felt that, you know, he had everyone behind him. 17 and 18 especially, the crowd was going at that 18th shot. Oh. I mean, I almost feel bad. We're talking about still this ruling. That was one of the greatest shots under pressure, at least in recent memory.
And having to back off before it. Unbelievable.
We have definitely, be included, have knocked Johnson for his, you know, lack of mental fortitude going forward. I think this was a great showing of, you know what, this guy can handle the pressure. I can't imagine. If anything, you can make the case that because he's a guy that doesn't really most the cerebral guy in the world, he was able to kind of put this aside and think, you know what, I have golf to play, let's not worry about it. And I think you just mentioned you won a lot of fans. He certainly earned my respect over the weekend.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I stood up and applauded for that approach shot.
Well, that's because you're a dork.
That's true. I am. And I was being mocked at home, believe me. But, you know, I couldn't help it. It was that amazing. And, you know, he always talks about how he doesn't let things bother him. And you say, well, that's impossible to let. But I really believe him, especially after watching this, especially after watching him club that drive on 12 after he was informed he might have the penalty.
Was great, by the way. Man, he hit the crap
crap out of the ball. That was incredible. But I really, and if you look back at his quote-unquote chokes or meltdowns, you know, the 82, I think it was, at Pebble Beach was awful. But the other ones were all maybe a mistake here or there. Obviously, the bunker gate at Whistling Straits. You know, he played well. Even if you look at Chambers Bay last year, he birdied 17, which is one of the hardest holes on the course.
And he parred 18. It wasn't even bogey. People assumed the three-putt was a par. Exactly. He got there in two. And
he had two of the best shots you'll ever see, I mean, under pressure. So he can play under pressure. He can't always think under pressure, but he can play under pressure. And who knows, now that he's gotten the one, you know, you never know. Could be off to the races.
It's been mentioned a few times, but I think it warrants repeating because I think it is true. I think you do look at Phil Mickelson, what he did in 2004 at Augusta.
Yeah.
It kind of opened the door, the floodgate for all these other majors to come. I think Royal Troon's a place that really sets up well for Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
Baltusrol, I can't see him. Not that he's going to do bad there per se, but I really look at Royal Troon as I think he probably enters as maybe 1 or 1A.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Day. I'd still probably go Day at Royal Troon, but I think Dustin's right there with Spieth in terms of guys that expect to compete there.
Well, when you hit the ball as far as he does and as straight as he does, any course can set up for you, and that he's certainly proven that, at least at these last two U.S. Opens. But we do have another tournament this week. That was very exciting, though, so I felt we had to. Oh, and I didn't even mention, I picked Dustin Johnson to win last week.
Not only did you pick Dustin Johnson, you also got Furyk, right, who came in number two, and There was a nice little pick. Yeah.
ZJ.
Zach Johnson.
And
well.
Brooks made a nice run on Sunday.
You.
Yeah.
It starting to look like you actually know what you're talking about.
Of course, the one guy I bet on was Rory, so that didn't work out. But the other four I mentioned.
Even Rory had that streak of brilliance to start out the second round.
Yeah.
Then things went south.
Yeah, it was the one time that my wife was like, you picked Dustin Johnson. I'm like, yeah. And she goes, did you bet on him? No. It was the one time she was upset that I hadn't bet on an athletic event.
Wow.
So
Did you sleep on the couch that night?
No, not quite all that. Right. But I did let her down and myself down. I should have been more confident in DJ. But it just seemed like it was a matter of time. Anyway, we move on to Quicken Loans National. Of course, at Congressional, about a month ago or a little more than a month ago, Congressional's in the spotlight. Tiger was there for the media day. Dunked the three balls into the water, the ceremonial shots.
You really haven't been the same since, honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
I think LeBron helped you get out.
LeBron, and by the way, Quicken Loans Arena is where the Cavaliers play. So it all goes back to LeBron. LeBron and DJ's win, because he deserved it, they both did, really got me going, got me out of my Tiger doldrums. But Tiger will be here this week. He will be playing host, though. He will not be playing an event. Maybe he'll give us some news on when he's going to actually play again. But in the meantime, Joel, who do you like this week?
The one guy that jumps off the page is Brennan Steele. You look at his logs this year, nothing great, but he's just been very consistent. Eight top 25s. At Congressional, he had a fifth place finish here in 2014. Also, I guess a little bit of preface. When you look at these guys' records at this tournament, do remember that last year it wasn't at Congressional.
Yes.
So be careful of that. But when in 2014, the tournament was at Congressional, and Steele did finish top five. He also has played well at Oakmont just last week. Came in, I think, 15th.
Yep.
Congressional's, it's pretty long, 7,500 yards. I think that actually helps in Steele's hands. I think he ranks 12th this year in driving distance. Steele's a guy who I don't necessarily like to win, but I think he's good for a top 10 this week.
Yeah, I like Brennan Steele, too. He's going to be my first pick. And, of course, Joel and I didn't mention he is on our fantasy team, Masters of None. He's had a nice, solid year for us. He's gotten our hopes up a couple times. We thought
he has struggled to finish on Sunday.
Right.
His Sunday scoring average is not that great.
But he's been very solid. He's up there in an all-around ranking. Another one of our guys actually is technically the defending champ, Troy Merritt. But Joel mentioned it was at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Club last year, not at Congressional. So don't just go on last year's results, that's for sure. In addition to Brennan Steele, I'll take another Masters of None guy, and that's Patrick Reed. You know, Congressional, like we said at the top, it is one of the tougher non-major tracks. It has hosted a bunch of majors. I think scrambling is going to be very key this week. Patrick Reed leads the tour in the new strokes gained around the green stat, so clearly that is the strength of his game. And he's tied with Dustin Johnson with those nine top tens for the most on tour this year. So I'm expecting another solid week for him. It was another disappointing week for him in a major, but we're back to the non-majors.
Which that kind of brings up a question. Do you think we, as the media, sometimes look too much into what the guys only do in this four-week span, basically? Or for Reed, example, great regular season record, but at the majors, he just hasn't done it yet. Do you think we put too much emphasis on that and kind of dismiss Reed since he hasn't done it? Or do you think there's a greater knowledge of, you know what, Reed really is a top 10 guy?
Yeah.
Or do you think he's still, in a lot of minds, isn't up to that echelon yet just because he hasn't performed at the Open or the Masters or the PGA?
That's a great question. I think obviously the answer is usually lies somewhere in between. He's an interesting case. The fact that I think a T14
that's his best finish.
Best finish. That's not getting the job done when you're a player of his caliber. Another guy like that who jumps out, and I know you're going to laugh when I mention him, is Bill Haas, who actually did win at Congressional at this event a few years ago. He's had six wins in his career, but he's never had a top 10 finish in a major either. And at some point, if you're going to be a great player, you have to at least contend. Now, where I draw the line is at players like Dustin Johnson and Sergio Garcia. And we finally saw Dustin win, obviously, a major, but these are great players. They've thrown themselves in the mix in majors. And at some point, there's a little bit of luck involved if you win or not. I know we knock Sergio for saying stuff like that, but it is true. You know, sometimes you do need stuff to break your way. My theory has always been, if you win, let's say, 10 PGA Tour events, you should have a major. You know what I mean? It kind of go, and if 20, you should have two. You know,
there's some correlation there if you look at history. That stands up a pretty good barometer.
So to answer that question, I do think it's a little overrated that players are able to turn it on for the major weeks. I think it's just they have great weeks, and sometimes it happens to be at a major. And finally, Dustin had that week, and now we're going to look at him like he's a major champion when really he's played great at majors. He's just had a few hiccups at the end. So
I think in Reed's defense, too, I mean, he's still young. I think he's been around the last few years that we think of him more in the late 20s. He's still, mid-20s guy. So I think there's still a lot of time. But it's just, again, what he's done to major. Even the Players' Championship, for that matter.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah.
Just nothing there. So it's one of those things where he really is, you look at his complete resume, it's really solid except for those five tournaments.
Right.
So,
no, you're right. It's still a small sample size, though. Where it was getting troubling was for a guy like, Justin Rose, obviously when he was 17. Mm-hmm. But like Justin Rose had a while. Now Justin Rose has really proven himself. Adam Scott, same thing. Adam Scott did nothing in majors till he was in his 30s. And then all of a sudden he got hot. And so, again, plenty of time for Patrick Reed, it's true. But I do, if I had to answer one way or the other, I do say we overemphasize the major weeks a little much. Because it's about timing when some of these guys just have big weeks.
Alex Myers, voice of reason.
Voice of reason here. That's what I call myself sometimes. Who else do you like?
Second guy that I really like this week is Charlie Hoffman. Made the cut in all eight tries at this event, including a third place finish in 2014. He's played well the last 6 weeks or so. Won at Texas Open. Also had top 15s at New Orleans and Byron Nelson. In terms of individual components to his game, nothing really jumps off at you, but he's just a very good player. There's no real faults, which is how he ranks 22nd in strokes gained. Hoffman's a guy who, not a superstar by any means, but he's also a top 25 player. I think he's 22nd in FedEx Cup. And he had a really good year last year that he's backing up. So I think Hoffman's a guy who, if you're looking for, if I had to list one as my three or four guys to win this week, Hoffman would be in the mix.
Another guy who's played very well this year is and has one really good finish at Congressionals, Kevin Chappell.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked about him a bunch, but the three runner-ups this year, including at the Players, he probably people won't remember because Rory McIlroy won by a million shots, but he was tied for third at that U.S. Open in 2011. So clearly this is a place where he's going to come back, have some good vibes. Again, you know, you can't have three runner-ups in one season and not be good enough to win a tour event. So, you know, Dustin, it was just a matter of time before he won a major. Kevin Chappell, it's just a matter of time before he wins a tour event.
We should mention this isn't the greatest field this week either.
No,
and a guy like
no.
Chappell, who's not that he's, you know, he's in that kind of second, third mm-hmm. tier. This is the type of tournament that elevates those guys up a notch. And because of that, you're right. I think Chappell's a guy who, yeah, is a pretty good bet for a top 10, top 15 this week.
I'll go with another guy right now. And we mentioned him already because one of my brilliant picks last week at the U.S. Open, that's Jim Furyk. And I know you're going to have a little differing opinion here, I think. But I'm so impressed with Furyk because he, you know, had barely played, only played four events since that wrist surgery, had done nothing, but just had a feeling he was going to pick it up at Oakmont. It's a special place for him being a Pennsylvania native. And that's a great tournament for him, really, you know, where you grind. He's the ultimate grinder. And sure enough, by the end of the week, he got to one under par. He even had a chance there down the stretch. If he didn't bogey 18, you know, if he'd posted a little better number, you never know. But again, Congressional, now he's finally got a good event under his belt. Of course, this is a little bit of a letdown to come here after coming so close to the U.S. Open, but he's 46. He doesn't have that much time. Every event that he plays in, I think he's going to take pretty seriously. And again, this is a course where it's not going to be 25 under winning. I think it's an opportunity for him to get a little momentum going.
I think one thing helping Furyk, too, is he's been named a vice captain.
He
wants to play.
Exactly.
He wants to be
exactly.
there. And I actually think if he finishes up well this mm-hmm. summer, I think at Davis level, I think he warrants a look how many, you know, and granted, he doesn't have the greatest Ryder Cup record, but
yeah.
he definitely has experience.
It's amazing because two Ryder Cups ago, when he was part of that awful collapse, we said, all right, Jim Furyk, you've had a nice career, but that's it. And he has not gone away. In fact, he's had some great years. He finally won last year to break that losing streak. A bunch of runner-ups, though, including this past week at the U.S. Open. And if you look at the U.S. Ryder Cup list now, I mean, we could do a special whole podcast on it. It is pretty brutal right now. I mean, Phil Mickelson's fourth. I think Brooks Koepka moved into third.
Yeah, I think he's up there. If you look across the pond, man,
yeah.
that European team is loaded.
Yeah.
This could be a rough one at Hazeltine.
Yeah.
But the reason but you mentioned earlier, we do differ on Furyk. I think just the U.S. Open is such a special animal that I don't think you'll see much correlation week to week.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much of a longer course, Congressional, than Oakmont is. I think that's really going to hurt Furyk.
That's true.
It's even though you mentioned it is, you know, Congressional obviously has hosted Opens in the past. I do think this is going to be a tournament where 12 or 13 under does win.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I still don't think Furyk has enough birdies in him to really compete. I think he has a chance to make the weekend, but I just don't see him ever contending at Congressional. So that's why he's one of my stay-away picks.
Fair enough. My big stay-away this pick is a guy who all of a sudden can't seem to make birdies anywhere, and that's Ricky Fowler. And I'd have to look back, but it's almost coincides with the infamous spring break trip. He has missed three straight cuts. Now, I'm not saying it has anything to do with the break. I'm not, you know, raining on his parade like Jeff Shackelford did, but it is pretty incredible that we were talking about this guy being in the big four earlier in the year, and now, by the way, there really is a big four, putting it out. I mean, Dustin Johnson has a major. He's number three in the world now. He's bumped Rory McIlroy. Anyway, that's a side note. Ricky Fowler, I think started the season with six top tens in his first like eight events or something. He was really playing well. Of course, he almost won it in Phoenix. He won in Abu Dhabi. He was up to fourth in the rating. And now, again, three straight missed cuts. He's missed the cut at the Masters. He's missed the cut at the U.S. Open.
He missed the Players.
He missed also at the Players. So the three biggest events, he's missed the cut. I don't know what's going on with him right now, but I certainly need to see some signs of life before I plug him into the lineup.
Two tidbits I noticed from Ricky last week. I followed him for a few holes, and the poor guy's just lost right now off the tee. Short game is actually looking relatively solid. And iron game, I only saw maybe three or four shots, but I think that helped. It was just his driving. It's going all of the – he's actually losing a little bit of distance because – now, I think that's because of the accuracy. But I will say in Fowler's corner, he was there on Saturday working on his game still. He didn't jet home. So this isn't – I think sometimes because of that spring break trick, some people look at him as a partier. He works as hard as the game as just anyone on tour. So I do actually like him to bounce back at some point this summer, not this week, but – for people throwing the towel around, he's still a young guy. He's got a lot of game left in him. You're right. He doesn't warrant a spot in that conversation of a top five. And he's not playing like a top 10 player right now.
No.
Let's go that far. But he's still got a bright future ahead of him. So we still a believer in Fowler, just not right now.
Yeah.
Another young guy though, who I am a believer in, Justin Thomas. Again, we mentioned earlier. Last year, this tournament was not at Congressional, so the T4th that Thomas posted, don't get too excited about that. However, I do like Thomas because I followed him, I think, two different days. He's a grinder. He was another guy who didn't have his tee ball last week. I haven't looked at the stats of how many fairways we hit, but I'd be surprised if it was over 50%.
Yeah.
He was that bad. And it's funny, he's the guy who, you look at his disposition, there are the shoulder shrugs, there are the, oh, God, I can't believe I just did that. Which makes you think he's a guy who doesn't have the temperament to withstand it open. But there he was all 4 days. Highest score at Oakmont was 73. Now he only had 1 day under par, but he was a guy who didn't have his A game and grind. That really impressed me, which we've mentioned the parallels between Congressional is not going to be as hard as Oakmont, but it's also, you mentioned earlier, you're not going to see 20 under.
Right.
For only 23 years old, I really like Thomas's makeup. He's having a really good year, four top tens, and that includes a third place finish at the Players. I think Thomas is the guy, again, with the weekend field. I think he's one of the two or three guys to look at as possible winners. So I think Thomas is someone that definitely needs to be in your lineup this week.
All right. And that's, we end on a positive note in terms of the Ryder Cup stuff, because hopefully he should be on the U.S. team, right? I mean, he's serious consideration, at least, if he doesn't qualify automatically. And Fowler needs to turn it around. Koepka is playing well. We mentioned Reed at the top, great, except for at the majors. And of course, Dustin Johnson.
Yeah, Dustin, Bubba.
You have a nice group, and a lot of them are young. That's kind of, we didn't even mention Jordan Spieth. Of course, there's Jordan Spieth. So it's not all gloom and doom for the U.S. right now. But right now, other than Dustin, really.
Guys aren't firing all.
Yeah, guys aren't really firing. But anyway, we're in the middle of a huge busy stretch, obviously. We're going to have the British in a couple weeks, and then the Olympics and the PGA. Firestone coming up next week, which is going to snuck up on us without even realizing it.
About to sneak up on our boss, Sam, when we tell him.
Yeah, exactly. Whoa, yeah, let's we'll have to do that off the air. But anyway, any other final thoughts?
There is one more player I wanted to mention to keep out, and this could be your one-and-done pick, but Jamie Lovemark. After posting three consecutive top tens early in the season, he really hasn't done. He did finish well at New Orleans. I think came second there. But outside of that, we haven't heard much from him. However, if you look at his sabermetrics, they paint a better picture than what Lovemark is actually playing this year. He is, I think, 32nd FedEx Cup ranking. So, you know, playing well. But you look at the stats, they paint a picture of a guy who should be a top 15 player, especially when you watch this guy swing in short game. I think the numbers match what we see. There have been questions about his game management, and some people wonder if he has the resilience to kind of go through. But I think it's all, again, he's only 28 years old. This is really the first time he's been consistently on this stage. I think it's just a matter of reps. I think this could be the week he breaks through and kind of justifies what we see in terms of this guy should be the guy we talk about every week. So I think Lovemark's a sneaky pick this week.
Okay. Well, my one-and-done pick is going to be Patrick Reed, who I already mentioned. And I'm, again, going for two wins in a row, which is tough to do these days on the PGA Tour. Unless you're Jason Day and you're actually winning tournaments in a row. But anyway.
Well, you're feeling good. You got the LeBron mojo in your corner.
Riding high right now. Yep. Just hope the USGA doesn't slap me with a penalty or something after the fact. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. Please reach out to us if you have any questions or comments. You can hit me up on Twitter at AlexMyers3.
I'm at Joel M. Beal.
And we'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes if you haven't done so already. And we will be back same place, same time next week. Thanks. Good luck.